Ain't nobody got time. Ain't nobody got time for that. Anyways, I got everything for you guys all set up. And
sweet.
Yeah, you ready?
I am so ready. Let's do this. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Breaking Geek Radio, the podcast, the flagship international podcast for the Genreverse Podcast Network and LRMOnline.com. I am Joseph Jim Medina, here joined today by two other geeks from, I guess we'll call it trifecta for now, and we get four trifecta of geekdom, and that is one Daniel Bartlett.
Good evening, song, or evening for me, good morning for you, and good afternoon for anyone else that's listening in another time zone.
And Nick Dahl.
Hello, or in a different time.
This is not live.
So, we got a big show to talk about today. One of the biggest shows in the history of shows for HBO. And that is The Last of Us. Doo-doo-doo. I don't know why I had the Mandalorian theme stuck in my head when I did that. So
Pedro Pascal rules all.
It's the Pedro Pascal effect. That's it. So Last of Us, we're going to talk the first episode, which is the only episode that's been released. And we did not get the whole season like a lot of other critics did. But that's okay. We're going to talk our hearts out about that first episode.
Nick and I. You mean you and Nick and maybe producer Carl. We does not include me. There is no me in we, because you lucky people get HBO and I do not. Damn it.
Yeah. This is what happens when you don't live in the good old US of A. You don't get HBO. But then again, you also have to buy some more streaming services. I remember in the good old days when I went overseas and I was able to watch Star Trek Discovery, you know, on Netflix. It was a glorious time. Such a time has now passed. I guess I could use a VPN, but and I even have one, but whatever. I don't like to use it for that type of thing.
I've also already shared Paramount Plus with you guys.
Oh, yeah, you did, didn't you?
I was using it as a weapon to get Kirsten into it, but you probably never
told her. Oh, I completely forgot about that.
For legal purposes, that is neither confirmed nor denied. That is a what-if situation for legal purposes.
You can share passwords.
Read your terms and services, Nick.
So obviously, everyone shares passwords. Come on. Mm-hmm. Don't Kyle's sitting there going like, oh my God.
You guys are taking the joke way. You guys are taking the joke way too seriously now. It's all good. Carry on.
So Last of Us. I was about to say season 3. God damn, Mandalorian. I can't get Mandalorian off the brain here. Last of Us, obviously it was a very, very, very famous, popular, well-respected video game that was released. I think it was the PS3, actually, back in the day. Had a remaster recently, and of course a sequel, which was a little bit more controversial for various reasons. But regardless, few people really contested that The Last of Us was kind of an amazing story and really showed how cinematic video games can be. To the point where I thought, what's the point? What is the point of adapting this into a series if it's basically just going to kind of, it's so story driven. It's not like Mario where it's like you have some characters and maybe like Mushroom Kingdom and maybe some semblance of a story. It's like, no. If you don't follow what's in the video game, why? But also, if you're just going to follow what's in the video game, why bother? So for me, it almost seemed like a lose-lose situation because in the element of film, you're taking out the gameplay element that makes you maybe more attached to the characters. You're not really adding much, generally speaking. I mean, you can, as this show has proven, but to me, it felt like a lose-lose situation. But the show has released the first episode, and of course, articles are coming out galore with regards to breaking the video game curse, which, by the way, is a BS argument because there have been plenty of great video game adaptations over the past few years. We have the two Sonic movies. We have Detective Pikachu. We have Castlevania. We have Arcane. There are plenty of them. But I guess the big difference was something I outlined just now, which is that none of those were really based on story-driven video games. This is definitely a story-driven video game. So we'll give that little asterisk there. But still, people need to stop talking about the video game curse. Well. What's that?
Two of them are animated as well, which frees up certain issues with video game adaptations, with aesthetic and graphics, effects, and things like that.
Sure. I would also say none of those are great, but a lot of those are good.
Disagree. You watch your mouth. Sonic is freaking great.
How dare you? Detective Pikachu is a joy. Arcane? Get the fuck out of here.
The ones I've seen. Them were great. Detective Pikachu is very good. Castlevania is very good. A few others. Anyways,
but my point is, I think the video game curse is a term that needs to die. It needs to go away because there are lots of great things out there if you're into video games. But this definitely adds to the pile. And I could see as being argued as potentially, I mean, I'm not speaking for myself here. I'm speaking based on everything that I've been reading, and that has to do with the general reception by critics and audiences for The Last of Us, which stars Pedro Pascal. And actually, I'm realizing now, I'm like, oh shit, I don't remember if Bella Ramsey is her name or her character name from Game of Thrones. Do you guys remember?
That's the actress's name.
That's the actress's name? Okay, what's her name in Game of Thrones again?
I don't know. I don't care for that crap.
You know, there are other people than just you in this chat, Kyle. Really? Someone else could know.
No, I don't care about that crap either.
Okay. Anyway, as of this recording, the show is sitting at a 99% on Rotten Tomatoes with 126 critics, 96% audience score with over 4,000 user ratings. Clearly, it is a big hit. And I'm just going to start out. I think it's a solid show so far. And to be honest, they kind of have a couple things going against them for me as an audience member. One, I don't like post-apocalyptic series or zombie movies/shows. Because I feel like, you know, for example, The Walking Dead. No, not for me. Because it feels like it is... oh, we're just going to keep surviving until we die. That's it. There's nothing more to it. We're just going to survive, and then one day we're not going to survive, and then it'll just keep going. It just seems there's no hope. I hate depressing zombie shit. And this is basically that. And I'm still like, I never played the video game all the way through. I only watched my roommates play it. It was great. But it was still a thing where I'm like, I don't know if I want to watch it. I don't know if I want to watch, you know, tragedy porn on repeat or zombie stuff happen on repeat. It just wasn't, it had things going against it for me. Anyway, I am just going to throw it out there. I give this, against all that, I give this first episode an A-. I'll talk more about what I did and didn't like in the next section. But Nick, what would you say your thoughts were?
I know I say this too often.
Oh, is this another A plus?
This is a genuine. God damn it, Nick. Almost everyone should give it an A plus. One, I keep seeing people write this, and I agree, where they're like, they haven't shot anything zombie related this well, and since before The Walking Dead, because nowadays The Walking Dead's kind of the punching bag, where it's like, yeah, started off good, but it's really been like kind of like you said, we're just trying to survive. Whereas this, I haven't even played the video game, but this has an actual path to getting past the zombie apocalypse potentially. But yeah, I would give it an A+.
No, lower your gain, Nick, by the way.
I can see
you give it an A+. I don't know if this has a path to pass the zombie apocalypse. I didn't play the game. From what I know, the last of us part 2, they're still in the zombie apocalypse.
That's true. But
for all I know, in second one, they're still in the zombie apocalypse. I don't know if there's a path. This could be tragedy porn. This could continue that path.
Let's go into slight spoilers. It's not really a lot to spoil in a first episode.
Okay, well, let's go ahead. And so you gave it A+. I gave it an A-. I have more stuff to say. But yeah, let's dig right into spoilers for The Last of Us.
He didn't see it. That's right.
Episode 1.
Ignore me.
He was going to say, well, it's Danny's opinion.
Yeah, no. And then I remembered he didn't get a chance to see it. Sorry.
No worries. Nick, sup?
Oh, well, I mean, just the basic plot from what I gathered from the pilot, I've never played the game, is that she's a key to a cure, which is why she's infected, but she's still fine.
I mean, yeah,
that
does, so
that's
seem like
a glimmer of hope, where I don't think Walking Dead ever has a glimmer of, I mean, like, even 28 days later, they're trying to like escape to like a base, but this is like different, and that one of them is carrying a potential cure.
28 days later had a happy ending.
Yeah, I know, but like in general with your zombie thing, where it's like, and the other thing that's opposed to The Walking Dead is this season is the first game. Next season is the second game. They're not gonna draw this shit out for 10 years.
Is that confirmed? I don't recall them.
Craig Mazin has said
it's gonna be a game. Craig Mazin.
Mazin, yeah.
Which, by the way, I love Craig Mazin so much.
You too.
He's in Chernobyl, but also he is involved in Mythic Quest. He plays two characters in Mythic Quest as well. He plays the Mennonist guy as well as the publisher in the flashback episode backstory for CW. I just think it's weird and random, but I thought also it was funny because in that flashback episode, I forget the actor's name, but the guy who plays Nelson Baghetti in Silicon Valley plays the younger version of CW, and he also plays the interviewer in the opening scene of The Last of Us.
Yes, that's who that guy was. I was thinking, yeah, that was a really creepy scene.
That was a great scene. So the show starts off really strong for me with just an interview on like a 1960s show, and it's just talking about, he's talking with these two scientists, one talking about pandemic and one talking about, or I guess viral or bacteria-based pandemic versus a fungal pandemic. And it was just engaging. Like, I wanted to be there. That was super interesting. I could have watched a whole show about that. But quickly they delve into, they skip past that to 2003, where we get to see Pedro Pascal and his daughter and sort of their day-to-day life. And it's just super, watching the day-to-day and their relationship, and it's just so well done. Like, I could have watched the whole show on that. I was fully in. And this is kind of where my first critique, why I'm not giving it beyond an A-. After that opening sequence with the beginning of the quote-unquote zombie apocalypse. I know it's not a zombie, but whatever. It's basically a zombie. The zombie apocalypse. I had a hard time latching on because to me, that second half just felt like kind of generic post-apocalyptic thing, which is fine. It's just not a genre that resonates with me. So it took a while for me to latch on to what was happening. You know, I think it helped when Ellie, the other character, who's great in the few scenes that she has, I thought she really nailed what I know about Ellie as a character from the video game. And it's just really fun to watch. And then her relationship with Pedro Pascal is kind of the burgeoning beginning of that, I think, is really interesting. But yeah, it took me a long time. Like, I was kind of a little bit bored for about 25 minutes.
That's my jammer bingo card.
It was still, there you go. It was still good.
I was going to say, Kyle said nothing official on season two.
Okay. It was still good, but I wasn't fully engaged. And because I am not someone who's naturally predisposed towards the genre, it was going to take a little bit more. And it did by the end, but it was a big learning curve in that second half from the beginning. But yeah, I thought overall it was still really solid. And I think for me, I was able to tell, even if this isn't for me, I could tell it was still very well written and very well made. So good stuff.
And before I go on to mine, Kyle shared the quote. I'm only going to read part that's important to what we said. This is from Mazin. He said through Radio Times and other press. So to me, the narrative of the first game was gorgeous. It was complete. It deserved a season. We knew how to do it within a season. And so that was a kind of a no-brainer. And I promise if we are lucky enough to do more seasons and keep telling the story, we will continue to make sure that every episode is worth its weight. So,
and wait,
more talking about more of the confirmation. And the other part you would like, Jammer, where he just kind of talks about TV should be more flexible with as many episodes or as you need, not necessarily always doing a season of like 8.
Or as few. Some don't need that many.
Yeah.
Though I guess Marvel has kind of proved that sometimes you do need more. Otherwise,
it just depends on the show. You're always hoping something shorter.
And I do remember being really annoyed. Speaking of Castlevania, I remember that first season. I was like, that was like an hour and a half, or I think it was 2 hours or something. I was like, that could have just been a movie. There was no point to divide that up into episodes. So I guess you're full of shit, Craig. I disagree. TV needs to be very stiff and put into freaking into boxes. I'm obviously kidding. But what did you think overall, Nick? Do you agree with me at all with regards to the steep learning curve in the second half of the episode? Because it was an hour and a half long episode.
Yeah.
That could have been two episodes.
No, I was disappointed it wasn't longer. I could have watched that stuff all night. It was, I don't know. It was really, I don't know. It's great. I definitely the best part of the first Nick. Half. No, you're laughing at
I'm
Kyle.
Not laughing at Nick. I'm laughing at Kyle's heavy reaction to that. Kyle, can you explain your reaction? You roll your eyes. You rolled your body at that reaction.
Just the idea of it being longer, because I think that I think overall this is pretty solid. I'm similar to Jammer in that it takes something extra for zombies post-apocalyptic to get me, but not because I'm bored of it, but because I love it so much. I've consumed so much that I need something extra. Otherwise it's just okay. Sure. I love blood and guts, so I can watch something bloody, but this has a little bit extra. I'm not sure how much, but it had enough that I was kind of interested. I think actually I liked it more than Christine, which when it comes to especially live action dramas is really rare. That's like her bread and butter. I'm a comedy guy more when it comes to live action stuff or action, not drama as much, but I think that you probably could have cut about 10 minutes out of this and made it a little bit snappier, or like Jammer suggested, maybe make it two different episodes with some minor edits in each one. But I find myself really frustrated on how many shows and movies these days are creating filler time with shots that are just, and I'm not talking like never have an establishing shot, but it's 5 seconds too long. You know what I'm saying? It's three seconds here, 10 seconds there, a lingering shot or one extra back and forth between like Black Widow and Kate Bishop in Hawkeye, the new Black Widow and Kate Bishop in Hawkeye. The whole mac and cheese thing went on for just like one exchange too many. And it's things like that that really draw out runtimes unnecessarily. And it is really getting grating on me. So that's why I kind of was like, oh God, you wanted longer? What else were they going to do? Stare at him staring at something for another 20 seconds?
In Nick's defense, he doesn't want to expand it within. He wants just to keep watching it. So in his defense, there's that. But I get you come from a Robert Rodriguez school of editing there for sure, in terms of like finding those moments and just snipping them out from each scene. As
and there's times
to like
for it. I mean, there are times to breathe in the scenery. You think of films like, yeah, literally breathe in the scenery.
I
said
that was a glass onion
it.
Reference. Sorry.
What was that?
That was a glass onion reference. A word that doesn't exist.
So you think of movies like Lawrence of Arabia is one that's always brought up for having those like cinematic scene setups where you just get to appreciate it for a moment. Some of the shots in Gettysburg are amazing, taken there at the battlefield in Pennsylvania, but it's becoming pervasive through everything, and not every genre nor even every movie in a genre that does lend itself to some of that needs it. And sometimes it feels like they're padding out runtime.
You're sounding like me, Kyle. I love it. We don't agree on very much, but you're sounding like me.
Gotta
is this how sex
hung
sound all the time?
Yeah, you're janiting.
Nick. Yeah. Go ahead. You were talking. You mentioned some stuff before.
I just want to build off kind of what Kyle and you were saying, but I think it's I didn't even notice that in the show. Just thought if there were too long of establishing shots or something. But I really like something I really love is Breaking Bad does the best, where it's like, okay, we're watching a cricket for like 30 seconds, and it just adds everything to the scene. Done well, I think that's a superior. It depends on the genre, but done well, that's a superior way to do an adult program.
If there's a point to it, sure. But if there isn't, then don't.
It's called art.
I'll give you a prime example of one that I liked recently. And I'm going to talk anime. There's about a 2 minute scene in Chainsaw Man where one of the characters, Aki, just goes through his morning routine. And it is a sound designer's, like a person that appreciates sound designs, like wet dream. If you ever get to watch Chainsaw Man, watch it with headphones on, because the sound design and mixing and everything is freaking amazing. And it's actually anime only. It doesn't exist in the manga even. It was used very purposefully to establish this connection between the audience and the character. And it allowed both the artists and the sound team to really show off what you can do with this medium. I fully appreciated that. I wouldn't cut a single second, a single frame out of that, but it was appropriate. I have no problem with ones like Nick said that are used appropriate.
So anyway, I think I part of the reason I probably also based on what Kyle said about seeing all the zombie stuff and make it harder to impress him because of that is that I've been avoiding zombie stuff for like the last 10 years because I've been sick of it until this. Like, I've been like, you know, Zombieland, that was one of the last zombie projects I watched intentionally because I was just like, no more. Like, we're down to meta zombies. Like, screw it. So that's why I really found this engrossing. Obviously, the first half is the most interesting half is with the backstory.
Like, I agree. Well, is that obvious?
You said it already. I meant in that way. Agreeing with Jammer, okay. The first half's the most interesting half because that's the emotional half. And the second half is more introducing you to the world. But I do feel it had to be one episode, not two, because I would have felt very wanting if they had ended after the tragedy and not at least started showing us the new world before.
Well, they could have started and then cut off when we first see him.
Well, I would have wanted to meet Ellie too in the first episode. That's fair. Her being, from what I understand, a more important or the bigger protagonist in. I don't know if the games. I don't know. I know very little about the games, which I think also helped. Some people who have played the games have a different opinion of those who haven't, because this is one of the I've been reading, at least from people who played the games and post memes and stuff. This is the closest one-to-one adaptation down to the exact framing of a shot that matches the exact framing of a cutscene, including the color of the shirt, the color of the brick behind him, exactly where he's standing against the brick. I've seen a lot of people posting comparison pictures like that. So, yeah, I loved it. I'm excited for first excellent show of the year. Kaleidoscope was fun, but this is the first excellent so far. So, and like you said, the reviewers gave it like 98 or something, and they've actually seen all of it.
99% of critics gave it a positive review. I don't know which ones saw the whole thing, but I do know some critics, some major ones, were given the entire season. So I don't know if the reviews... I don't know if the reviews whose reviews are based on entire seasons versus on one episode.
Fair enough, yeah, because I've seen a lot of people tweeting who have seen it all, and I'm like, you sons of guns.
I think that first half was just so good. That the character, the girl they got to play the daughter was very good, because she essentially is the main character of that first half, and she carries it very well. And I like the dynamic between her and Pedro Pascal. Like, that whole setup was just really good, and I was just like, oh yeah, she's definitely gonna die. Like, she's not going very far. Like, she's dead. Spoiler.
And they carry the sense of dread very well, and not like in, you know, some of the movies they're like explain what happened on the news, or you see the perspective of someone who knows more about what's going on, and this one it's just like, this is what the perspective is from her point of view. She has no idea what's happening or why it's happening.
Kind of got Dawn of the Dead vibes from 2006? What year was that? Less extreme and intense, but definitely, I think probably slower burn, but has more emotional weight, even if there's less kinetic sort of energy from it, for most of it. But yeah, highly recommended. We'll see if I continue watching. Like, I will continue watching the show, but I am still curious. I'm like, is it just going to be, we're just going to keep surviving until we die? I don't know if that's for me. That's just not the type of shows I normally watch. I don't think those are fun to watch. I just don't like depressingness on an episodely basis. It's just not for me. We'll see how it goes. Like, I liked it. I think it's deserving of all of the praise so far. I wish it the best. Good job, HBO. Good job, Craig Mazin. You're doing the world proud, apparently, and fans
and
seem to love it.
It is the second biggest weekend for HBO in the last 10 years. Or you said that beginning or not, behind House of Dragon.
Yeah. And that was, you know, an established
premiere, well, I guess you call it.
Both are established franchise, but one is established TV franchise, and this one is like brand new. but obviously based on two very successful video games. And it's always weird to me how the video game industry is literally bigger than the film industry. And yet we always act like film is just like the definitive definition of what is, you know, popular in mainstream pop culture. It's just bizarre to me.
I think video games are only bigger money wise because costs $50 to buy a 60, I think soon $70 to buy. I think they've said they're going to do their their A title is going to be $70 on Xbox and PlayStation. But whereas like I can go buy the movie or rent the movie for like $20.
Right. I mean,
for HBO Max, I'm not spending an extra dime.
I would have to do more research on this. I'm not sure by how many billions of dollars the video game industry outpaces the film industry, but you know, is it significant enough to where it's just like you could, it's only just because of that, or what other reasons are there? Regardless, it's a very popular industry. It's just weird to me. And as I mentioned at the top, it is interesting to me how like it's difficult to do these adaptations simply because you're pulling out one aspect. You're really not adding anything, because anything you do in film, you could technically do in a video game, in a cutscene or whatever.
Jammer.
And in this one, it's like you really just have to capitalize on the film's strengths. Anyways, go ahead, Kyle.
Worldwide, the video game industry is approximately $195 billion as of 2021, with a global film market, which includes China, of $267 billion in 2022.
Whoa. So I'm wrong. It's not bigger.
Yeah. Now the video game,
I could have sworn that it was bigger.
Video game was expected to grow to $220 billion in 2022. I don't have an official number for 2022, just that estimate. But again, from the Business Research Group, the 2022 global market was $267 billion. Yep. And expected to potentially grow to almost $300 billion by this year. But that again includes China. And if you watch the if you look at like foreign box office numbers, it's ridiculous over there sometimes for their movie. They'll have the biggest movie in the world for all year, and it's only released in China. So interesting stuff these days.
Any last words about The Last of Us Episode 1 before we move on?
No. I agree. Watch it.
All right. Well, this is kind of a good transition, talking about numbers and box office, because our first story of the day has to do with the continued success of Avatar 2, The Way of Water. Nick, you can't give a thumbs down. You haven't seen the movie.
That's how I feel about the franchise.
Say I don't like the franchise just because you don't like, well, I guess you can say that. You don't like the first movie. Good for you. But this was a franchise that, you know, for north of a decade, ever since, maybe about a decade, ever since it was pushed back from, I think, originally like 2014 or something, they're like, the window is passed. No one's going to care about this thing. Everyone kind of had that narrative for a good solid 8 to 9 years or so. And then it started to approach. And honestly, I don't remember specifically what I thought in terms of what it's going to do box office wise or what I've expressed. I probably thought it'd be like 1.4 to 1.6 billion. I didn't think it was going to flop, but I was like, hey, the window is passed. There's no way it's going to like hit. It's not going to hit Titanic numbers. That's what I was thinking. And the narrative around it pretty extensively was pretty negative. As recently as a couple months ago, you had some fanboy reporting out there. And this is in addition to actual reporting, but the fanboy perspective is everyone kind of talking about like, hey, this is going to be a flop. There is one article that talked about the film may only gross $150 to $175 million domestically. And we'll talk about where the numbers are in a few seconds. But a lot of projections were in that realm. I know recently Kyle and Manny were talking box office numbers prior to the release. And Manny was on point with the opening. He guessed $130 million domestically. The movie made $134 million domestically. And I remember the narrative at that point was the stock market for Disney went down following that weekend because it didn't do as well as they had hoped it would do, what they thought it would do. But per usual, no one is taking into account the James Cameron effect. And that, you know, Kyle rolls his eyes. God, you need to get that checked out, dude. That's like a chronic problem.
James seems Cameron to only effect, happen when I'm around you guys. I don't get it.
But Kyle made a funny statement. Not a funny, but it's a telling statement. He says, no one we know personally was dying to see this, nor any that have given it much more than a B range grades. Where and who are these fans? So I have a couple responses to that. Well, A, the James Cameron effect is basically bringing people into theaters who don't normally see movies. And these people don't talk about it online. And these people who you said who didn't want to see it or were dying to see it, did they see it, Kyle?
What's that? Who?
The people who weren't dying to see it that you knew, did they end up seeing the movie?
Most of them haven't. A few have.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. I know I have, Brian, I knew I was going
to
see
it. Brian didn't even want to go. He went because someone wanted him to go.
Well, there you go.
He valued the relationship.
Who is that someone?
Then I'm not going to out his private business. Well, it's not like a romantic someone, but
my point is that it was someone who's normally like all about movies, or was it like just a normal being?
No, it's someone that's a movie person. Like that's their thing.
Why are you dismantling my theory?
Look, and this whole idea of the James Cameron effect of bringing people to movie theaters that wouldn't normally go see it. Let's look at his filmography. We have Avatar: The Way of Water 2022. And then Avatar 2009. Before that, we have Titanic, romance film. Romance films were huge in the 1990s. True Lies in 1994, action film with Arnold Schwarzenegger. On the follow-up from his 1991 Terminator 2, which came after the super big, again, 1989, The Abyss, sci-fi movie. What was really big in the 70s and 80s? Oh, yes, sci-fi. Because back 3 years before that, we had 1986's Aliens. This idea of the James Cameron effect goes back one freaking movie, Avatar.
Everyone thought Titanic was going to flop.
It was a romance film.
Was going to flop. A 3-hour romance film in a genre that excels at freaking 90-minute quick in and outs.
I was 11 years old at the time, so I don't remember reading the news stuff. And you must have been, what, 8 then? So I don't know how much news stuff
you
were reading.
Dude, I went to film school. I read about this shit.
Okay, then. Good. He's got two.
My point
two
is,
films.
I went back and looked at this stuff because I'm a fucking nerd. And so, remember, I know reading back like older articles about how like, oh my God, the budget for this is ballooning. It's never going to be able to make back its box office. It's going to be a huge disaster. No one has faith in it. Bada 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 ba. And then obviously it became the highest grossing movie at the time. Avatar, when that came out, that movie, they were like, oh, it's going to be the most expensive thing ever. It's not going to make its money back. It's going to have to make ridiculous box office. It comes out, makes $74-ish million in its opening weekend. And everyone's like, that's it. It needed to make like $100+ million in order to be financially viable. But it kept on going. It kept on going. And it went on for fucking ever, going on to make $2.7 billion at the time and another extra $200 million on re-releases. So now continually still be the top film grossing at this point. And now we hit the Avatar: The Way of Water, which is a movie that has really kept that James Cameron effect alive. I'm going to keep saying it just to piss you off. James Cameron effect alive. And that's because, you know, it continues that relatively good trend. Following its opening weekend, it dropped 52%. Then it went up a little bit. Then it went down 32%, went down 28%. And so it's doing pretty solid business continually. It is currently, as of this recording, at $1.93 billion worldwide. I think it's definitely going to crack $2 billion. I think it stands a good chance of beating Titanic, which is, I believe it's $3.1 billion.
Now we put it at number 3, right?
Hang on a second. So actually, 2.194.
We put it at number four.
Okay, but $2.4 billion.
No, number 3. Sorry.
Oh my God, Nick! I'm trying to I can't math when you're talking. $2.2 billion. There you go. I don't know if it'd be number 4 though. Essentially is what needed to get to.
Because I think it was in the top 3 still Avatar, Endgame, Titanic.
For global, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Jammer, now this is one thing I will say, because if you remember my whole point was people counting out the Cameron effect. This would solidify the idea of him being able to do what you're saying. But everyone looking at all of the recent film trends of how heavily front-loaded films are, the average tickets sold in the theatrical market versus from a few years ago versus today, because ticket sales are down, even though raw numbers are up because of inflation and ticket prices going up. The number of tickets being sold is way down. As a matter of fact, 2019, which we all know had Endgame, had 1.2 billion tickets sold. 2009 had 200 million more than that, at 1.4 billion. 2007, 1.42. 2004, 1.5. 2003, 1.5. And then, of course, you have the pandemic stuff. 2022, 813 million tickets sold. I'm not defending everyone on it, but even all of the top industry number crunchers, not even fan sites, did not see this coming, based on more than just personal feelings or, you know, who and what they don't know. But the James Cameron effect wouldn't have been a thing in anyone's mind, because again, the last movie was 2009.
Disagreed.
I will say I am shocked it did this well. I knew it wouldn't flop, but I thought it would place a mid-level Marvel movie as far as gross.
I thought it would be north, like I said, 1.4 to 1.6 is what I was.
I guessed knew it about 1.5 worldwide.
I actually honestly didn't think it would crash a billion, especially after the opening weekend. Well, I honestly thought people didn't care anymore. Jammer, you're the only person I've met in real life who's seen it. I mean, a friend in real life. Two people at work saw it, but they're normal people, as we like to refer to, not film people, which does tie into your theory. Because, yeah, like, I don't know, none of my other friends have seen it.
Because they're Danny, a
friend, but I've never met Danny in real life.
For where I am, I'm totally with you, Jammer. There were so many people that don't talk on Twitter, Instagram, don't get on this Discord, don't follow sites like ours, that have gone to see the movie. I was back home briefly for Christmas this year, and my mum said she went in to watch it. 77 years old, loves Star Wars, by the way, and went to see Avatar because she loved watching it. But she would not be someone that would get onto the internet to talk about it. So I think there's a lot of people that recognize the name, remember it from 10, 15 years ago, whatever it was. Jammer, 2009, did you say Avatar? Was 2009, and want to go and see some more of the same thing. So I'm not surprised by it. I am a little surprised that you think it might beat Titanic, because it's still got almost $1 billion to go, though, right? Did you say 2.94?
It's at domestically. Titanic is at 2.94, and it's at 1.9.
Sorry, I thought you said 2.94. Sorry, Jammer, I thought it's not going to get another billion to beat that.
That would be Avatar 1 if they were to get to 2.94.
That would be impressive. Just saying that, we've got a re-release of Titanic coming on the screens here at the moment.
Really?
So that's going to make another few other million dollars as well, I should imagine.
Oh, yeah.
I can't be. Is it 30 years, is it now? We've got a 30-year re-release of it.
No.
25?
I hope not. 24. No, 25. Fuck. Is it 25?
It would be a anniversary. They wouldn't release it 24 years later for a re-release.
Yeah, 25. It's got to be 25, right? So they're re-releasing it on the big screen here. So but I'm with you, Jammer. There's a lot of people that wouldn't talk about it that have gone to see this film. And I really enjoyed it. I can't remember what grade I gave it, but it was a high grade, and I really enjoyed it. I've seen it twice now.
I wanted to see it a second time, but the timing was never correct. So I'm now like, I'll wait for Disney Plus and definitely watch it again, though. Like, yeah, I had a good time.
Beautiful. On the IMAX 3D, it was beautiful.
I didn't see it in IMAX 3D. I'm still not a proponent of premium, you know, tickets, premium theater experiences.
I got you.
I understand.
I'm like, the second time I watched it was a regular screen, and it is a stark difference. Normally, I would be with you, Jam. I totally would say that, but this was a huge difference between IMAX 3D and a regular big screen.
The sound system is definitely makes a big difference, for sure. And then just sit closer to the screen. Just fucking sit closer to the screen. It's the same.
I like it
shit.
Bigger and louder, but I haven't seen a 3D movie since the pandemic, and I don't intend on ever seeing a 3D movie again.
Yeah, me neither. I'm not a huge fan of 3D. The same shit, Kyle.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting it to be this big, so good on it.
Yeah, good job, Cameron. They secured the future for
Don't buy a bigger monitor. Just sit closer to your monitor. Oh my God. You don't even understand human anatomy.
You don't understand how fucking smart I sound right now, Kyle. I'm like beyond your kin.
You need lenses and things to make that work.
Jammers, saving money tricks. So yeah, it'd be a clever way to say that. But
Jammer's the type of person that bought the giant magnifying glass to increase the size of his like tablet screen when those were a thing.
No, but I was the type of person who got that from my original Game Boy back in the 90s.
You could just held it closer to your face.
Sure, that's a good point. I should have done that. That was stupid. All right, cool. Let's move on to the other couple stories we have going on, which are both trailers. I put one in here for you specifically, Nick Dahl, because I know how much of a fan of the Scream franchise you are. Personally, I'm not a huge fan. I think I haven't watched it since Scream 3. I think whenever that came out, I watched that one. I didn't watch the show. I didn't watch the other ones that came out either. I'm not a huge fan, but I did like the original back in the day, and I'm always a fan of seeing revivals really bring back the spirit of the original and kind of exist beyond its means in a good way. And so when this one came out, I was like, all right, I'll give it a watch. Let's see. I'm not really excited for it because I didn't see the fifth one or the fourth one, but whatever. It was a good trailer. It showed, you know, a ghost face, you know, going around the convenience store, chasing down our leads. And, you know, the more stuff that ties it into, like, the original franchise and freaking the legacy of Ghostface. You got Ghostface fanboys, you know, with having Ghostface memorabilia in their Ghostface-themed lairs. And it's just, I don't know where this is going, but it's interesting and it's entertaining to watch. So overall, I think it had a great opening. I just think it had a bad title. Like, you know, Ghostface Takes Manhattan would have been the obvious direction to go for this, and I'm just very disappointed they did not. But Nick, before we go to Nick, because we know Nick is going to give us an A+ trailer. Danny, what did you think of this trailer for Scream 6?
I was pleasantly surprised by how much it's got me interested in actually watching the movie. I'm not like you. I wasn't a huge fan of the franchise. I mean, the first one was great. I did watch the previous number 5, but other than that, no interest. But what I liked about this one was it was one of those strange trailers that was showing us a lot, but a lot of it was misdirection, I think. I think it was throwing a lot of the screen for us, but not necessarily telling us anything because it could contradict itself quite easily. Giving us full sense of who might survive, who might die, and what or who the Ghostface killer could be, etc. So I actually found it quite interesting, and therefore it might have my attention. You know, even bringing back, what's the name, Hayden Courtney Patisserie Cox. Or whatever her name is.
Courtney Cox.
To me...
No, he was talking about Kirby from Scream
Heroes.
4. Hayden Panier or something. You both pronounced it wrong. Yeah, her.
Yeah,
she was in the fourth one.
Oh, okay. Yeah, exactly. but just it had enough going on and enough something new stuff to make me think this is actually going to be worth it. Even there was one bit of it that made me think, yeah, this is trying to throw us curveballs and stuff. And obviously at the moment they're probably at risk of being sued by someone. But there was a scene in the trailer where Courtney Cox's character is on the phone to the Ghostface killer, and in the background, the Ghostface killer is killing someone that's in the house with Courtney Cox. So I'm like, well, then that implies that there's two killers, right? But that could have just been clever editing of the trailer, because there's no way he was talking the way he was talking and stabbing someone to death without being slightly out of breath.
It's like Iron Man 2, except with ghost faces.
This is what they're trying to do. I don't think, and they even hinted at the fact that it might be a supernatural thing. I don't think they can go that route, but there's nothing to say that the screen world is not supernatural just because we haven't seen it before. But anyway, all ifs, buts, wants, maybes, clues make me interested in it. So I was pleasantly surprised that I'm interested in watching this film. Well done, Scream 6 trailer.
Thank you. So thank you for mentioning Hayden Panettiere, because I was just like, she looked familiar, but then she had to cut away and I was like, oh, I forgot about it. So thank you for pointing out why she looked familiar. Anyways, Nick, tell us about why this is an A+ trailer for you.
It's not an A+ trailer, but I was very happy because I don't think it's going to be. I mean, the last one wasn't an A+ movie either. It was just a return to form where they actually had something to say in the last movie. And it was commentary on toxic fandom and requels, which is why it was intentionally not called Scream 5. And this one is called Scream 6. That was to make fun of all those movies where it's just like, here's the original title. Yeah, the last one was called Scream. Isn't because that's it's making
fun Scream.
That would have been another. They could have called this one the Scream. But
fun.
But that's my worry, is I don't know what they'll have to say about the franchise. I feel like you can go two directions, but one of them's similar to the other. The last one is someone else pointed this out online that you could. It almost seems like this one could be about people who are less obsessed with the stab movies, and maybe they did like a true crime, you know, docuseries, which we see all the time about Scream, like the events of Scream. So it could be more about people obsessed with true crime, which would be an interesting way to go. The other interesting way to go would be like the Joker effect, like from the movie Joker, where there are a bunch of them who are just like, we worship the ghost face. Like, someone else also pointed out that that might not necessarily be one person's private collection of Scream memorabilia, including the TV that killed a character is literally in that room, and like clothes that were worn when people were murdered and stuff. It could actually be an official museum that was put together that is causing more of an obsession. And I do think the idea of Ghostface Takes Manhattan is an intentional way to skewer other horror movies that have just been like, and now it's set in New York City, or even like Muppets Take Manhattan, like, you know, like we're doing that franchise thing intentionally to be like, hey, look how, and they'll comment on it in some way. But
we need a Scream in Space then.
I would love
Scream X.
So no one would hear it though, Kyle.
You would call it No One you Can Hear You thing. Scream. That'd be the name of the movie.
You said the thing.
But yeah, it's a good trailer. I was not disappointed. I'm just still, every time there's a Scream movie, you're worried that they have nothing to no, because the good Scream movies, they always have something to say as far as like skewering sequels or horror movies or requels in the last one. So,
right.
But I do like the new setting.
That's in addition to being a horror series, is like satire. Not necessarily parody, but satire.
Yeah, because Scream is all about satire. That's what makes it special. It's scary too. Like a masterclass of you ratcheting up the tension where you think the kill could happen at any moment and it might happen 10 minutes later. But
I just remember last year when Nick made all of us watch Scream and then wasn't on that episode
2 years
ago.
I remember that.
Revisiting Scream and being like, I forgot how freaking horrifying that intro is.
Mm-hmm.
We're like, they hang her up by her entrails. Jesus Christ, that's insane.
Yeah.
It's crazy. A lot of horrific things. The last time I saw it before that was probably a solid 10 plus years prior. It was very surprising. Just like, it's satire, but it's like, it still takes its killing very seriously.
And they're doing the Avengers Endgame thing where it's like, well, I remember hating it, but now I have to go back and watch Scream 4 because I don't remember shit about Kirby. His character. So I feel like it's very intentional to be like, it's like, well, I guess Scream 4 was important now again, or at least remembering anything about her. But because that was their first attempt to like reboot it, you know, and no one saw it.
Well, let's move on then to the next trailer, which is very more fanboy friendly in terms of Star Wars, it being Star Wars, and that is The Mandalorian Season 3. Of course,
more Pedro.
We see baby Grogu and, you know, the Mandalorian continue on their journey, this time to Mandalore, and, you know, to, I guess, do stuff with more Mandalorians. I'm not really sure, but if you're digging the tone of The Mandalorian, this trailer has it in spades, along with the lovely theme song. Personally, I think I'm waiting for I don't know. It looks like more of the same. I don't really know where it's going because the first two seasons were very much about, I guess, reuniting Grogu with his kind, his quest. And where do they go next? Obviously, there's something, it's going to be more focused on the Mandalorian himself and his own personal journey. How that ties into the other Mandalorians, we'll have to wait and see. Or maybe I just forgot. But one question I have is, I wonder how confused people who didn't see the Book of Boba Fett are over
the fact that
Grogu and Mandalorian meme about are back together.
Where they're like,
is there? What's
what
it
the
say?
Oh, it's just the idea of like, what the hell? Like, I won't say the other word on the air. But it's like, what did how is Grogu back?
Yeah.
That's why you apparently have to watch all Star Wars. It's like Marvel.
I loved it. It got me in the jellies. I'm super stoked. I think the last time I was on, I think I made it quite clear that I'm stoked about Star Wars stuff this year and not so stoked about Marvel. And this trailer just got me. I felt all, and obviously Star Wars means different things to different people, but for me, I felt all giddy with the Star Wars stuff. You know, there was things I recognized and new things that I like and characters that I remember, and I just felt excited by it, and I just don't have that feeling with any Marvel stuff, so I'm super happy that this felt like Star Wars to me. The only gripe I have, and it's minor, is that he said this is the way. He said it the second time towards the end of the trailer. I don't think he needed to say that. When Grogu uses his force power to push that creature away, I don't think he needed anything said over that. That's my only gripe. Mm-hmm. We know this is the way. That was the nice statement. But listen, that if that's me griping about this trailer, that they use that line once too many times, shit. I thought it was great. I feel Star Wars in my jellies, and I can't wait till March the 1st. I thought it was great. There was even lightsabers in there. Awesome. Give it to me. Give me the stuff I like.
Looks like another flashback to the Younglings.
Yeah, more flashbacks to the
problem
the
with
Republic.
That. So,
what do you think, Nick?
I really enjoyed it. Because I never know I'm excited for a Star Wars show until it gets close. But Mandalorian's obviously one that I trust at this point, even though you've kind of said it is kind of more the same each time. It also didn't really stretch its legs much farther past the films where it's like, hey, look, you remember this suit? You remember this alien? This one, we have a Salacious Crumb species in a tree. Like, you know, it's, but I really am interested going into the new plots, which I assume. And Boba Fett, he's told he has to go to the certain waters of Mandalore in order to be accepted back into his tribe, because he stupidly admits when he could have lied that he removed his helmet to the armor. So that's his quest. Is he's
Dude,
like, he won't be a true Mandalorian.
Lie. You can't lie, man. Then you're going to Mandalore.
Lying
hell.
Is the way. But lying, and then also there's the big, I'm also sure we'll see more. We see the guy in the cloning outfit that we've seen since season one. On Coruscant, which is also interesting. That's a location we haven't seen
in
live action.
The guy in the what does that mean? The guy in the cloning outfit. What does that mean?
The guy scientist. From the first season. Yeah.
So I didn't hear what you said, Kyle.
Scientist, the doctor, scientist that was working with the bad guy in season one. He was the one that was like, you know,
who walked away. Who.
The one that originally hired Mandalorian to find the thing.
Yeah, he was working with that guy. And then he was in season two, or at least we saw a hologram of him in season two working on some project.
I'm annoyed because I don't want to revisit the seasons because it's like, but I feel like I should because I clearly don't remember enough.
And I think obviously we'll get more Moff Gideon somewhere. Or I mean, not obviously, but hopefully. I can't imagine they would leave any Giancarlo Esposito off the table. But, and I also like the other plot is likely to be kind of the clash between two different groups of Mandalorians as far as Bo-Katan. That's her name, right? Bo-Katan. I don't know what mine was from. She obviously wants the Darksaber and has to earn it in combat in order to reach the role she wants, which is head of Mandalore. So
didn't Mandalorian blow up? Or am I just thinking of...
No, it wasn't blown up. The planet still exists.
I mean, you see it in the trailer.
I think I'm confusing it with Planet Vegeta from Dragon Ball Z. I don't know why.
You're not confusing it with any of the Star Wars planets that were blown up?
No, not confusing any of the Star Wars planets. Well, you know, because the Mandalorians are like a race of like warrior race of people who lost their people. And in Dragon Ball Z, you have a race of warriors whose planet was destroyed. So there aren't that many left. But as the series goes on, you find out there's a lot more left than you thought. There's similarities.
I have two questions for you guys. When the X-Wing pilot from the first two seasons, or at least the last season. Mr. Kim says there's something darker brewing. Do you think they're talking about the First Order already?
I have no clue.
I mean, they should be, at least eventually.
That's such a generic line. I'm like, there's always something darker brewing.
And then do you think the clone guy has anything to do with the Emperor's return?
There's something dark brewing. Okay, and it's done.
Kyle seems to agree with me on both of them, just based on his head shake. But yeah, the other one would be related to the return of the Emperor or Snoke or whatever. The idea of they've been trying to clone Force-sensitive, or at least use Force-sensitive people like Grogu to create clones. It's hinted at in season two.
First Order. I think that they're referencing First Order in this one.
This is a little over 5 years after Return of the Jedi.
Yeah, I assume we're closer to 7 years. If maybe there's a year between seasons, who knows? But so we're within at the least we're within 15 years of Force Awakens. So obviously they would be rising up in some way.
The first two seasons happen over the course of 5 days.
That would be impossible, but it's possible 5 months.
I mean, I think 2 years, that's a stretch, I think. I think
even with the Book of Boba Fett stuff.
In a galaxy far, far away.
What's that?
Maybe the sun rotations around moons are all different. Maybe 5 days is 5 years in Earth time.
Sure. Interstellar.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I think this looks okay. This looks good. I need to... Mandalorian has always been a weird series for me because I love the feel of it, but it's just, I always feel like there's not enough story in each episode, and I'm hungry for like something a little bit deeper. And I think season two was a little bit more ambitious, but it was, the problem I had with it is that I think it relied too much on pre-existing lore, and it felt like it didn't have confidence in itself. So it was just like, let's just throw this other thing at you, and let's throw this other thing at you that you're gonna like love. And I'm hoping that this kind of finds a better balance of that. Now that, you know, what's his name? Din Djarin, or the Mandalorian, is like no longer leveling up his armor and stuff, or doing like, it'll be
less questy,
almost like a video game, less questy, less like you need to go to this place and do this thing, and then you'll get this.
Then I'll do you this favor.
That will help you do this. And I'll do you this favor. Yeah.
Well, I mean, as far as wanting to get deeper into stuff like Star Wars and have it be less shallow, have you started watching Andor again yet?
No,
that's exactly the Star Wars you're asking for.
I know. Like, I'll get to it.
Fair enough.
But yeah. That is all I have to say about Mandalorian Season 3 trailer, and that brings us to a close in this latest episode of Breaking Geek Radio, the podcast. Dear listener, thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy day or letting us join you in your car trip to your commute to whatever job that you're doing to make this world a better place. We really appreciate it. Don't forget to check out all the other Genreverse Podcast Network shows we have, including The Cantina, Animeversal Reviews, AVR Squared, Cup of Genre, Daily Shot, and God damn it, I forget one of them. Always
Daily genre Cup shot. Of Genre. Genre
Daily Cup
shot.
Of Genre. Genre Shot.
Say AVR Squared. Are
I
you?
Say AVR Squared.
Okay. He's forgetting the Marvel show.
Marvel Multiverse Mayhem, which is currently on hiatus until you have something Marvel S.
Ant-Man grows closer. We're less than a month away.
Ant-Man. Are you going to do anything building up to it? Are you going to watch any other Ant-Mans leading up to it?
Probably not. Kyle's already shaking his head. I'm kind of agreeing with him already.
There is no need. That will not feed the algorithm.
Okay.
We are all slaves to the algorithm.
Nick, where can people find you?
I'm at GeekyNickDoll on Twitter.
Danny, where can people find you?
I'll be in the living room rebuilding my Lego Infinity Gauntlet that got broken in a recent move.
I know, mine got broken when I moved too. Anyway.
I hate rebuilding Lego. I love building Lego. Rebuilding has become my new worst nightmare nemesis. Insert swear words, I hate rebuilding Lego.
It's funny, awful. When you say Lego and not Legos, you sound like Tarzan.
No, but he's right.
I hate rebuilding Lego. I know it's correct. I know it's correct. I know it's correct. It just sounds
I say Lego
wrong.
Now too because of Lego Masters. That's got me into saying Lego.
It sounds stupid.
It's Lego. Yeah. Just move on. Stupid. Say goodbye, Jammer. Move on.
All right. Well, you Lego. Can find me on Twitter at AJ Serna Writer. You could also find my books under that name, AJ Serna, on Amazon and Audible. And don't forget MagiaBooks.com, MagiaBooks.com. Thank you so much, Kyle, of course, for working with us as producer per usual. And once again, thank you, dear listeners. And we will see you all next week. Hasta lasagna.
Don't get any on ya.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.